Good evening. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey, and along with FL, K2KEY, we run a thing called the TechNet. It's a gathering of the clan where people come together and help each other get a greater understanding and a little more pleasure out of this unusual hobby of ham radio, which nowadays is the marriage of computers and wireless products. There's a lot of computing going on. A person signs into the TechNet because he's got a question or a comment by giving Mel and Dick your call letters and your name, as well as the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. So, do we have any check-ins tonight? Please give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW.
Yes.
I heard nothing but yes, but I recognize the voice. That's Joe, WA2RYY. Anyone else?
WB2CUK with a question.
And I bet you his name is Bill, and he didn't tell me. Okay, Bill. Joe and Bill so far. Anyone else?
KB2SMW. Doug. No.
K2VDV. Laura, Coney Island.
And Laura, is that a yes or a no? Doug said no.
Negative. No.
Okay, anyone else to check in?
Detroit, no.
KC2MDP, Steve, no questions.
Good evening, all.
No questions.
And 2EO, no questions.
Okay, a bunch of no's. Any yeses out there?
Get right to the mailbag, then. This is K2KEY.
Sounds good. Well, we've got two yeses, Joe and Bill. Joe, W-H-U-R-Y-Y, take your time. Looks like you own the place tonight, Joe.
Well, not completely, but that's okay. Okay, a question I have is basically, back on the subject of DTV antennas, I think I sent you an email about different types of antennas to get, and would I be looking for something with a very high amount of gain or a moderate amount of gain? I live about 50 miles from NYC and could put the thing up about 25 feet or so.
Okay. And what Joe is doing for us, thank goodness, is he's repeating a discussion that took place earlier in the week when KE2EJ, Eric, who will... is an engineer at a broadcast station, Channel 13 and Channel 21. Joe and I, those three people had a good discussion. And part of what's going on is that people are starting to be concerned, Joe is one of the first ones that I know of, about those who are doing over-the-air television reception. In other words, they're not using cable and they're not using satellite. They're using over-the-air reception, standard television broadcast. Will their normal analog television antenna that they've been using for years continue to work? And if you live in a metropolitan area where you're relatively close to the Empire State Building, there's very little doubt that it will keep on working. Joe, living out in Bohemia, I keep forgetting, Shirley, I think it is, but anyhow, he's roughly 40 or 45 miles away from the World Trade, from the Empire State Building. And as such, he's not positive he has line-of-sight reception. He's willing to use, to my knowledge, an antenna that's on the roof of the house as opposed to a simple rabbit ears on top of the set. When you live 45 miles from a broadcast station, even if you got a fairly acceptable to you snowy analog picture with your old-fashioned antenna, your rabbit ears on top of the set, even if you did get that, if you live a distance like 45 miles, the chances of the rabbit ears working are very, very slim. By way of the discussion we had with Eric, we came to the conclusion that even an antenna on the roof of the house that gets a moderately strong signal puts you in a good position, but not an excellent position. In other words, the difference of satellite, analog television versus digital television is that not only is the signal strength have to be above some particular threshold for the system to work well, but an additional requirement is that the amount of multipath has to be somewhat controlled. And let me drop for a second, I'll explain what multipath is.
Okay, here you go.
It is the man who's going to really explain it. Eric, go right ahead.
Right. The point of multipath was in you can actually see multipath in your analog television. When you see a ghost, okay, you're actually seeing two signals. You're seeing the main signal that's coming from the transmitter. And depending upon how far the ghost is, you could actually figure out where the reflected signal's difference in time is or how far away it is. For example, when they were building the World Trade Center, and all the TV transmitters were on the Empire State Building, and they put up the sheet, the covering of the north face of the World Trade Center, all the people up in Westchester and everywhere north had TV pictures where they had two faces. It made it impossible to watch. You had a person in the screen that was, say, on the left side of the screen, and you could see that person there. You would actually see a ghost image of that person, pretty much melding into the solid image of the person standing there. And what it was is that the signals would transmit from the Empire State Building, reflect off the World Trade Center, and the person up in Westchester would be receiving two stations on the same frequency with the image arriving at two different times. That's a multipath. Now we have the same thing in digital television. Let me write a graph. In digital television, it actually presents a different kind of problem. Whereas in analog television, you can, with your brain, filter out that other image and make it not bother you. Whereas in digital television, what that will do is completely confuse the device that is doing the computing. Is this the first bit of information, or is that the first bit of information? So this thing that we call multipath has been one of the more difficult aspects of digital television. And as the receivers improve in their design, they are more capable of handling that and figuring out which is the main signal and which is the reflected signal. And of course, in real life, there may not be just one reflected signal. There may be many. Back to you, Dick, K2RIWK2Z.
Okay, so as I see it, the bottom line of this is that putting up an aerial, putting up an antenna on the roof of the house, which gets a strong enough signal from the Empire State Building, that's a necessary but not sufficient. The second part of the equation is you've got to, in some cases, have either a decoder, which is modern enough in design that it can tolerate the number and the magnitude and the delay time of the multipaths that exist in your particular environment. You may be getting a direct signal from Empire, a reflection off the water tower, a reflection off the apartment building across the street, a reflection off the ground, and the direct line of sight path simultaneously. And in theory, a modern day demodulator, decoder, digital decoder, should be able to handle that, but your particular one maybe cannot. A possible solution to this would be to put up a higher gain antenna than is normally required. By definition, an antenna with higher gain has a more narrow beam width. And if you're smart enough to put a rotator on that antenna, so that as you first tune to channel 7 digital television, next March we'll say, and then you go to channel 11 digital television, and then channel 13 digital television, you have the ability to change the aiming of the antenna, which changes the relative amplitude of those multipath signals, because they're coming from different angles. And in almost every case, I believe, there will be a specific angle in which your system is happy, and you remember that particular aiming angle for channel 7 and aiming angle for channel 13. Now, this is an extreme situation for a fringe area person that's 45 miles away. But I think that's a possible solution for a person who is reasonably well-equipped like Joe. I wonder if you agree with that set of opinions I've just put forth, Eric. KE2EJ, a broadcast engineer who has touched the hardware and set it up with his own hands and watched it work. KE2RIW, the TechNet.
Very funny. You know, you should invite one of your friends in Texas to join us, you know. We have that capability. It'd be
be nice to have a guest speaker join us here. Well, it's an interesting, it's really an interesting phenomena, and it's not the same everywhere I go. I've been to many people's in different installations and seen how they work. You can be at one particular point on the island, on this side of Jane Hill, or west of Jane Hill, where you can park your antenna in one place and pretty much be happy with everything. As you mentioned, the higher gain antenna, just to give you a little interesting story, when I first moved to Channel 13 from 58th Street to 33rd Street, and the World Trade Center was still standing, we had a lot of problems trying to monitor the transmitter itself from the World Trade Center, because the ghost thing was really, really a big, big problem. And in the signal that we transmit on 13, which we still do actually, there's a funny looking signal that's on one line. I think it was on line 16. No, line 19. Sorry. There's something called a GCR, or a ghost canceling signal, and that works quite well, but only within a certain degree. The reflections are so bad that even the GCR wouldn't be able to handle it. So what I did was I got the most fringe, highest gain Jaggy, actually a single channel antenna that I could get, something that was intended to be like 60 miles away from the transmitter, and put that up, and voila, it did an amazing job for me. We were able to get ghost-free pictures using the GCR. Even with that antenna, we were still getting some ghosts. But it was well within the range of what the GCR could do, and it looked like you had an absolutely perfect picture in the analog domain. I'm going to drop. That sort of thing actually is a very, very good way of dealing with things. You will find that as you get closer into the city, when you're using a indoor antenna and rabbit ears, that you may actually find yourself putting it in one position for one channel and in another channel. But yet you will find locations where you can plop the antenna in one place on your dresser, let's say, and leave it there and get everybody. It's still a little bit of an iffy thing in that respect, but as the newer devices come out, that problem becomes less and less. So, given time, it will become more perfect. And the reason why I say that is now that the FCC has decided that the receiver technology has improved to such an extent, we're now actually doing what's called distributed transmission. Rather than have one big transmitter in one location, and it doesn't necessarily apply to New York or where we are, but it applies a lot in the Midwest and the mountains and stuff like that, where they actually put up a bunch of smaller, lower-powered transmitters, and the receivers are capable of saying, okay, I like this signal, I'll take that one, and give you really good reception. One big deal about digital television, which you don't have to stick with an analog, you can be off and still see a picture. The digital television is an all-or-nothing type of deal. Either it fits within the realm of what the receiver can do, or you get a black screen. K2RW, K2J.
Yeah, the wind is waving the antenna on top of Glen Oaks building today. I'm guessing that's what's going on. And the signal does have a slight amount of dropout. Good, strong signal. 95% of the time, but 5% of the time you are dropping out, carrier dropout on the input of this particular machine, Eric. So maybe you can aim the antenna a little bit differently, change the power a little bit, or whatever. In the case of digital distributed transmission, which I think is a concept, they may give it a different name, but there's a somewhat similar concept going on in Europe, where instead of having major television broadcast centers, the European television, digital television, is somewhat like cell phones. That is to say, there are nodes, you could say, or cell phone sites, they're really television broadcast sites, every few miles. They're distributed all over the European area to make sure there are no dropouts. Now, when in the United States we use distributed transmission, a particular person behind a mountain in, we'll say, Montana, in theory might be able to get, if he's lucky, a signal from two separate transmitters that are on the exact same frequency. I am curious what degree of frequency accuracy and or absolute coherence is required between those two transmitters so that his converter can decide which one or the combination of the two that it picks up in order to reconstruct that picture. That's question number one. And question number two, the threshold on digital, in the case of signal strength, when you go from a full picture to no picture, I have, you have the impression, after talking to Art on that subject, that it's a fraction of one decibel. A fraction of one decibel of amplitude change, in some cases, can make a digital converter go from full picture to no picture. So, that first question, frequency and or phase accuracy between two transmitters, same channel, distributed transmission. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
All right, K2RIW, KE2EJ. Is this any better?
No dropouts on that transmission. What did you change?
Yeah, well, the other week got up a little bit of a problem. I changed the antennas. I'm using, actually, I'm using my satellite antenna at the moment. So I'm sending circularly polarized signals to the receiver, but that should be fine. I'll tell you what. Let me just make doubly sure I understood what you said, because I was disconnecting the radio. Run it by me again.
Okay, when it comes to distributed transmission, question number one is, what frequency accuracy and or phase accuracy, coherence, is required between those two transmitters to make sure that a person picking up both signals simultaneously will have a demodulator that's able to handle it? That's question number one. And question number two, is it true that in some circumstances there's only one decibel of difference between full digital picture reception and no digital picture reception? Art did tell me there are times when it's only a fraction of one decibel. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. Yes, a fraction of a decibel is enough to cause cliff effect. It actually is sort of like a half a dB leeway, and it depends on the front end of the particular receiver. Some receivers will take it down to RF and then put it up into IM2. Some receivers will take it right out of the tuner and put it up into IM2. What it means is, instead of using 45 megahertz, they use this, what is it, they come out at 90. It's still, it's really up converting on the low channels and down converting on the upper channels. There's different manufacturers have different ways of looking at it, but pretty much for the most part, it's a standard tuner that comes out with an IF at 45 megahertz, and at that point, they will take and turn it into IMQ, and some people will go further down and bring it down lower before they do it. Depends upon whose stuff they're using for the converters. As far as frequency accuracy goes, there's two schools of thought. First of all the digital transmitters will be locked to actually the Naval Observatory, which is provided by the GPS satellites. I'm a user of one. We basically have an oscillator that is phase locked through the GPS system, averaged out across 16 satellites, and it actually reflects with a very high accuracy the cesium clocks at the Naval Observatory, which also is a very accurate source for time. So there is frequency accuracy in the transmitters and distributed transmission, which is a requirement. The second school of thought is, since the symbol is 97 nanoseconds in duration, that there is actually a point where you can interleave them, sort of a little bit like CLFDM, but it doesn't work well with older receivers. And it's still a source of experimentation for some of the manufacturers, so it's not anything that's set there, but at the way things stand at the moment, the distributed transmission systems are precisely locked in frequency, not necessarily locked in phase, which is somewhat relevant and irrelevant, because if you're, say, you're picking up from one transmitter which is 10 miles away, and you're picking up another transmitter which is 20 miles away, you get a phase difference anyway, even if they were both precisely in phase with each other. K2RW, K2K.
K2KEY, got a question.
Go right ahead, Mel.
Okay, I know a local person here that works in Senator Kruger's office. That's a local senator here. And she says that a number of senior citizens have been coming in, that, of course, these people are, many of them are on fixed income living in rent-controlled apartments, that they will not provide them, of course, with any kind of cable access, so they're on an indoor antenna. One of the local appliance places here were volunteering to install for these people, these senior citizens, the cable, this box, the DTV box, at no additional cost. And they have gone up to their apartments and wound up saying they don't know what to do. They cannot get any kind of reception whatsoever using the DTV box at all with the indoor antenna. So they would like to know if there's any kind of something in the way of an indoor antenna on the horizon that's going to be able to give these poor people, after February, they're not going to have any reception, these senior citizens. I don't know, you know, what to say, really, because I'm surely not an expert in this particular subject, Dick. Over.
Yeah, let me ask you this question first before we have Eric answer that one. And that is, to your knowledge, Mel, using the rabbit ears or whatever they had on their set in the senior citizen home before, were they and are they getting reasonable analog television reception? Maybe some ghosting, but they're getting analog reception now, and when they try out the new digital box, or at least the particular one that was tried, probably using the same set of rabbit ears, essentially no reception was there. Is that essentially the situation, Mel? Back to you, Mel.
Exactly. I told them about the recommendation on that scene in the 901 box to try that. See if that is an improvement. Supposedly it's recommended. Their reception was anywhere between, I'd say, marginal to fair. You know, these high-rise buildings and everything, congestion here and everything, and you're on the wrong side of the building. I have seen sometimes the reception, and it's, like I say, now for them to see something, it seems to be satisfactory for them. Go see, snowy, whatever, but they were happy with it. But to go from that to absolutely nothing, I don't know how they're going to handle it, Dick. I'm going to have a senior citizen run on the government over.
Yeah, I'm about to pass this over to Eric for some further comments on this one. Combine that with what I just read in the ARRL letter of a week or so ago, where the National Association of Broadcasters and or the Federal Communications Commission has approached the American Radio Relay League and asked for amateur radio help. Now, the help that they asked for, and they specifically said, they are not asking amateur radio operators to go into the home of their neighbors and to do an installation. They're specifically not asking to do that. They ask them to pass out literature, asking them to discuss the situation, to try to help them out verbally and with paper, but not to, they are not being asked to go into the home. So when you combine the fact that there are going to be a significant number of people that fall into the category that Mel just brought to our attention at the Senior Citizen Center, combined with the fact that you and I here right now, Eric, are talking to ham radio operators who have been asked for our assistance, I know there's no glamour fix here, but I wonder if you've got any suggestions. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. Now, there's a number of things that need to be mentioned here. I actually haven't read that, and as soon as I get Jack in here, I will go read it. But one of the two things that are actually going on, one is anybody who has receiver, say, 3 months or longer in the past before all the antenna changes happened at Empire, whereas you may find that there are some people that had reception and no longer have it now. That's one possibility. The other thing is, as the 17th comes around and some folks go back to VHF, there's going to be, in those places where they were not able to get any UHF energy, they will possibly pick up a VHF or two. So that's going to be there. The reality is that the system kind of sort of works. But the system doesn't really, really, really work. Not in that sense. Because you can go into people's homes and see them watching through snow and ghosts, and they're perfectly happy. It's like you can turn your AM radio on and know that there's some electrical devices going on. You hear all the static, but yet you can still listen to the news channel and get the news. So that is going to be the major difference. And I am actually expecting that, not right on the 17th, but, you know, in the time that comes past it, that a good number of people are going to be complaining to their government that they can't watch television. And that's just a sad reality of what's going to happen. There's an entire National Association of Broadcasters and the FCC and the CEA and all the manufacturers that will tell you that this is a wonderful system. Yet, they will not really tell you the stark reality of what can happen. K2IWK to you.
Along these lines, Eric, I have the impression that certain kinds of appliances in a home that make certain kinds of impulse noise, fluorescent lighting, maybe the heater mechanism that's arcing over for the pool heater, the fish tank heater can be arcing. There are a number of things in the house, a faulty doorbell transformer and so on, which make a kind of impulse noise which I believe is tolerable to amplitude-modulated television, to an analog television signal. You just see these two white bars across the screen that slowly drift across the picture vertically, take about 10 seconds to move across the screen. And although it's annoying, it's tolerable on VHF channels, particularly lower VHF. Even the upper VHF has a little bit of it in extreme cases. I have the impression that the digital television is not very tolerant of that. So I see the possibility that people are going to have to go into a home and do sniffing as to what appliances are creating the grief that is aggravating digital television reception. That's a guess on my part. Do you think that's a possibility that some people will run into that problem? KE2EJ, K2LIW.
K2LIW, KE2EJ. Impulse noise is your enemy, but as the equalizers get better, it becomes less of an issue. Impulse noise tends to be something that's intermittent in nature when you're talking about the typical home, unless you have something that's continuously arcing or continuously making that racket. That can be a real problem. When you're watching TV and you see those dash lines go by, when a car that's got a really unshielded ignition system happens by, you see it come and go. And what will happen in the digital television, say you're a picture will freeze, you won't be able to tell what the source is, and then as soon as that interfering impulse noise gets weak enough or disappears, and your picture comes back full speed. So, yeah, I see that scenario as there'll be devices in the home. Now, they may have an antenna on the roof even, and it'll be just making enough impulse noise to cause the picture to block out, break up, stall, stutter. We have a lot of different new interesting labels for describing artifacts in pictures, so it's kind of a different world, but yeah, you're going to be seeing a bunch of that kind of stuff too. But it's going to take a while for people to figure out that that sort of thing exists. I mean, the TV repairman is becoming a thing of the past because a lot of TVs have the throwaways, and the technology is so beyond many of the TV repairmen that they don't fix them. K2RW, K2J.
Okay, Now, I hope that we all, I'm suspecting that a significant percentage of the people in the sound of my voice, ham radio operators, Mel and I are two classic examples, and what you do for reception is another. We love over-the-air broadcasts. I, for one, have just never made the leap into cable. Mel hasn't done it either. But a significant percentage of people, particularly close to the metro area, running on rabbit ears, at least one of the sets in the house, the set that's in the kitchen that hangs below a counter, and as they're sitting there eating their breakfast in the morning on the rabbit ears, they watch the news. So they're watching over-the-air broadcasts. Last Sunday, you guys were proposing to run a test at 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that of digital television for a half hour or so. As February 17th of 2009 approaches, I am guessing more and more of the individual broadcasters will possibly announce or possibly not announce, maybe you being on the inside can tell us, they will be running tests of digital television on off hours. I'd like to believe that between now and February 17th, each one of our channels will get a chance to say, yep, digital television is coming in right now, my digital converter is hooked up, and I'm seeing a picture, and I'm happy. Well, I'm not seeing a picture. So, do you think it's possible, Eric, that more and more of those stations in the beginning of next year will be running those tests, therefore we'll get...
Hey, everybody's transmitting digital, and has been for several years now, and some for as long as 5 or 6 years. What we were talking about is, since the particular station that I was talking about, which was Channel 13, their digital currently operates on UHF Channel 61. We actually had the transmitter that we used for 13. Normally it's a redundant two transmitter setup for Channel 13, so if one transmitter fails, it automatically switches over to the other. That's not the case anymore. Whereas that one transmitter is still analog, the other transmitter has been modified to digital, and the concept was we just wanted to see if it made it through the antenna and everything worked well. So, you know, the concept of, well, we'll see if the digital works, it's just not there. Everybody is currently transmitting digital. And it's just that some of the folks that are moving their frequencies, which is pretty much everybody, want to have the opportunity to make sure their stuff works before the 17th, and most of everybody's doing it into dummy modes, but not necessarily into the antenna system. Actually, the week before last, Channel 7 did a test, but unfortunately the exciter just spit out random bits and nobody was able to get anything, and he had actually tested it before they actually put it live on the air, and it worked properly, so they have some bugs to work out. But that was kind of the point. K2IWK, 2K.
Joe Rick, the guy's going to get you and one more transmission. Eric, yes, I know that when it comes to almost every broadcaster, and a few others, are broadcasting on UHF television digital right now. But in the case of Channel 7, 11 and 13, or is it 7, 9, and 7, 11 and 13 for sure, are going to switch back to upper VHF digitally. So will digital upper VHF testing take place, hopefully at announced times or times that you can tell us, between now and next February 17th? Over to you, Eric.
Now it's Christmas time at the moment, and nobody's thinking about it right now, but yeah. They won't announce it, but I'll know about it because I usually participate in it and see what kind of reception we get. Actually, my prediction for the VHF is going to knock the fence off the UHF in terms of receivability. And I say that from hearing the experiences of some of my other friends around the country that are currently transmitting digital on VHF. And a couple of stations that are transmitting, there's actually quite a lot of stations that are going to be going back to the low VHF, and believe it or not, there's some stations that will be on Channel 2. So it's going to turn out to be interesting, especially if you're a TV DXer, because that part of propagation, interestingly enough, when you DX with digital television, all of a sudden it snaps in, you know, depending upon what the IS is doing. You've got a picture like you right next to the station, so it can be pretty wild in terms of those kinds of observations. It takes a little different technique to figure out what you might be picking up and how you might go about it, but after the 17th, it's going to be a more straightforward thing because the PSIPs will reflect the actual channel they're transmitting on. What a lot of people are doing is they don't actually include the frequency in the data that they're transmitting. There's a facility for that. Well, within the digital data, it performs the translation, you know, even though 13 is transmitting on channel 61, when you tune it on your tuner, it says 13-1, so it knows something about it. H-O-I-W-K, you do that.
On that last transmission, you had a dropout at a very key point. You said the VHF channels compared to the UHF channels are blank. And you used the word meaning that the reception is a lot easier, a lot better, or a lot worse, or just very different. So upper VHF reception, when it goes digital, is going to be better, worse, or how different than current UHF digital television. Repeat that one there, Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, well, from what I gather from the folks that I've talked to around the country, I always suspect that the high VHF is going to knock the pants off of the UHF in terms of receivability.
Now, if I've got a real good antenna for UHF, where I'm capable of putting up more gain there, I would like to believe the UHF reception should be at least equal, if not better. I think you're telling me that the majority of people that are getting over-the-air broadcast reception have a reasonably marginal UHF antenna on the roof or inside their house. I guess in a lot of cases, they're using nothing but that loop of wire on the back of the set for UHF reception. So it's, in my opinion, a lot of the fault is inadequate equipment, not only the fact that foliage attenuation at UHF frequencies is considerably higher. Express an opinion on that one, Eric, go ahead.
Well, I guess kind of we're going to have to see, but there are differences in propagation and how reflections occur. The fact that the wavelength is a little longer in terms of multipath, from what I'm gathering from people, it has a different kind of characteristic. Whereas as you get into the upper UHF, the smaller building construction, cracks in the way things are built, internal steel structures and stuff like that, whereas the longer wavelength seems to have a more favorable response in the receiver in the end. Not necessarily talking about signal strength. We don't usually have to talk about that. It's usually more reflections that we're dealing with.
Okay, I've got more questions on this, but I'm going to hold them. Joe, W-H-O-R-Y-Y is the guy who asked this beautiful question and launched us into this whole thing. I can tell that the subject of digital television is one that has hit the TechNet five or six times in the last couple of months, and it's going to be a great subject of discussion. Joe's the guy who asked this question. I guarantee you've got some more questions. Over to you, Joe. W-H-O-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-A-W on the TechNet.
Well, I guess I don't know if I'm going to be putting up just strictly UHF or high VHF and UHF. I issued that in an email. I said I guess you don't have any thoughts on that. Now, from what Eric is saying, some stations may even use low VHF, maybe not even around here. But I don't know what kind of antenna I want to really put up. Whether I want to put up one that actually covers from channel 2 through 13 and UHF, or just worry about high VHF and you know, with a moderate gain and UHF with high gain type of thing. But I actually have a comment. Channel 4 had a test they were doing last Thursday from 7 to 7:30, and while they did this, since they announced it about a day or two before, I think you're about to write you down a little bit there. Too much echo here. Before they did this, I had an old TV I set up, a small black and white TV. I set it up with an amplifier and said, I don't have a TV antenna outside. I just used a disco antenna for receiving purposes because I want to see what this actual signal is going to look like. Are they actually going to do a DTV test actually on channel 4? Turns out they didn't. All they did was put out a repeating message that had like a test pattern behind it. that. If you can see this, you're not receiving digital television. So they weren't actually transmitting DTV on Channel 4, per se. My other TV was running cable on the cable at the same time. It's interesting, the first time I noticed this, because I've never done this before, there was about a 3.5-second delay receiving the cable signal compared to what I was seeing in analog off the air, when they were eventually went back to an analog, complete analog transmission. And it's about a 6-second on digital TV. So however cable receiving, they're not receiving off the air, they're receiving through some other means, and that's digitized. But it makes me wonder if these broadcasters are announcing these tests, are they actually going to be doing any on-the-air VHF low or VHF high test in DTV mode before the 17th of February of 2009? Eric, do you know any answer about, you know anything about that? Are they actually going to be doing that? Because I know you said plenty of times before, they're all running on UHF only. They've been doing that for a couple of years now, but are they actually going to be doing any tests actually on the VHF channel so you can see if the thing works or not?
Okay, what we call a soft test. First of all, Channel 4 is not going to be on VHF. They're staying on UHF. And have you tuned to Channel 2 analog and Channel 5 analog and Channel 7 analog and Channel 9 analog and Channel 11 analog and 13 analog and 21 analog? That was pointed to that by the New York Metropolitan TV Association. So those folks that are watching over the air on their analog TV saw these wiggly, snowy color bars in this crawl by an announcement that went by twice, and a coordinated effort of all the broadcasters. As far as any individual broadcaster wanting to check out the transmission facility, as I said before, Channel 7 tried to 2 weeks ago, Channel 13 was going to do it a week ago, but the other broadcasters that are on the same antenna objected, so that didn't come out. But I suspect they will do it at some point, and I'll know about it. When I know about it, I'll let you know. I mean, it's not something that they're going to release publicly because it's an engineering function. It's not for people to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and do.
Eric, maybe it's the aiming of your circular polarized antennas. You're getting a fair number of dropouts again. I know that there's a shared antenna on the Empire State Building. In other words, one antenna probably is covering quite a number of the VHF channels simultaneously. I presume another antenna is covering many of the UHF antennas simultaneously. So when a VHF channel announced that he wants to, at 2 o'clock in the morning, make a digital television transmission, and the other broadcasters object because it's a shared antenna, what is the nature of their objection? KE2EJ, KQRIW?
It's a manpower objection. They want their folks there when that kind of thing happens, so if something blows up, that the individual stations can deal with it. It's really fear on the part of management, because anybody goes into a combiner which goes into the antenna, there's nothing in the world you can do to blow it up, but, you know, business is business.
Okay. I guess I can sort of understand how a manager of another station would say, gee, you're hitting me with this at a time when my people are not there. They won't be able to correct it. You knock me off the air the next day. I lose X number of millions of dollars of revenue because my channel is blank and my advertisers are not being served. Is that the nature of what we're talking about? That's question number one. Question number two, in the case of analog television reception, in theory, I could have a relatively simple RSSI, receiver signal strength indicator. I look at the automatic gain control voltage of the receiver as I aim the antenna, and I can tell the antenna is going in the right direction because the signal is getting stronger. In the case of digital television, an RSSI is not going to help you. Getting the signal stronger because you've aimed the antenna better is a necessary but far from sufficient. A much better solution is some kind of an indicator that tells me bit error rate of the digital demodulation. To your knowledge, does any of the converters of a price range that you and I are willing to pay for as private television watchers, not as a television broadcaster, but as a private television watcher, do any of them have the equivalent of a bit error rate indicator telling me that I'm now putting the steerable antenna on my house in the right direction. Therefore, I'm going in the direction where pretty soon the signal's going to pop in. I'd like to get some kind of information other than just yes or no. The picture's there or the picture's not there. I'd like to know, like a blind man walking up a hill, I'd like to have a little bit of a feel of the ground to know when I'm going in the right direction, even before I get to the top of the hill. Does anybody do that? K2EJ, K2LAW.
K2RW, K2EJ. Actually, every single receiver does that. There's a signal strength indicator, which is really a bit error rate indicator. It's inverted, of course, so, you know, the lower the bit error rate, the higher the indicator is. But many of them are two-stage, whereas that one actually looks at AVC voltage up to a certain point, and anything beyond that, because what happens is that the bit error rate will have a saturated number. It'll be maximum, whatever the methodology of pulling it out is. And then it will decrease from that point. So for the first, say you have a 0 to 100 indicator, from 0 to 20 will actually be what the AVC is doing, and anything above that will be what it'll actually be what the error correction is doing. It'll be a combination. It depends on the manufacturer, but in many cases it'll be a combination of the error rate of Viterbi and Trellis, and in some of them it will actually have the BER of the MPEG decoder in the process. So that's why some of the receivers you can change from sub-channel to sub-channel, see different numbers, because it's really looking at the MPEG decoder in the end. But I've only seen that in a couple of reference receivers. It's not in the general public stuff. The general public stuff is a little bit AVC voltage and the rest error rate.
Okay. If I'm already getting a picture and I want to make sure that the picture has some extra margin to it, and I'm looking at the RSSI, Receiver Signal Strength Indicator, and I'm aiming the antenna back and forth, or moving my rabbit ears, or doing whatever, that hopefully is making a change in the picture, that's great. But here's my next question. Assume that I've got a picture on the screen that's just marginal. I'm right up to that point where another half dB of decrease of some quality of the signal, whether it be multipath or signal strength, is going to make the picture freeze. I've gone that extra dB, the picture has frozen. And just for me to test how well the system is working, I now continue to degrade the antenna performance. I either move the antenna in a direction where I'm getting greater multipath, or I'm moving the antenna in a direction where I'm getting a smaller amount of signal strength. Will that RSSI continue to give me an indication for the next 20 dB of decrease in antenna performance? I'm hoping I've got at least 20 dB below threshold where it still will tell me something, because if I'm in the position where I'm getting no picture at all, I'd like to be getting at least 20 dB of dynamic range of signal to let me know I'm going in the right direction. From your knowledge and your experience of these available digital converters with an RSSI, do you think they have that, Eric? K2EJ, K2LAW?
K2RW, K2K. There's an interesting phenomenon to be observed here. One is, take yourself a variable attenuator and put that in line with your digital receiver, and you will find this is cool, because really the top end is error rate. Depending upon how much dynamic range you have, you might be able to pop another 20 dB of attenuation in that line without even seeing the numbers budge. So it can be an interesting phenomenon. Oh, another caveat about doing that is there is reaction time. Your locator is probably going to move faster than the summation of the error rate indicator. So you got to kind of slow yourself down and remember that. But what I will tell you is this, is that you're going to find a particular number on your indicator is that a threshold point where you get reception, you don't get reception. So if you're going from 0 to 100, it might be, say, on your particular receiver, when you hit 40, anything below 42, it unlocks and goes away. But you will find that if you set it so that it's 41 and you move the antenna off or you add some attenuation, you will find that the indicator will go down. So there is a certain amount of tuna AGC that is used for that indicator. So actually the pilot, which is the peak of the envelope, so to speak, is a, you can consider it like, you know, a DW signal that you peak on. So the tuners will actually AGC based on where it tries to see the pilot. And as you go down to no signal, you'll see the numbers drop. But when you're in that threshold of, say, below 42, multipath is not going to have any effect because you don't have your digital section locked up to even consider multipath and measure it in any shape or form. KQIWK2J.
Eric, when you were plugging in that step attenuator between your antenna and your converter, and you were watching what the RSSI was doing and watching what the picture was doing, I think you said when you got down to 42, the picture dropped out. So from 42 down to zero, you had some dynamic range of display. However, your test was a little bit optimistic because your step attenuator is decreasing the signal strength, but it is making essentially no change to the multipath characteristic of what's taking place out in front of your television reception aerial. And there's no easy way that you could be, you know, cranking in multipath as you do this step attenuation function. I sort of understand that. So aiming the antenna is really going to be a little bit more realistic because it does, without a doubt, change the relative amplitudes of the multipaths simultaneously to decreasing the signal strength. What is the amount of delay? In other words, if I'm moving that antenna, do I have to stop and wait 3 seconds or 6 seconds every time I make a move before the RSSI indicator catches up with me? That's question number one. And I had a second real great question which has slipped my mind. I'm going to bring this, turn it back to you. K2EJ, K2LAW.
Comment to WK2EJ. Well, if you're in a Great Plains state, the multipath doesn't exist, you know, because there's very little stuff in the way when you're out in the Midwest. But, yeah, there's an occasional water tower or something. So, on some sets, you'll be able to move your antenna left and right by, say, 5 degrees and not see any change. Whereas being in a populous area like this, moving at 1 degree, you'll see a change. Don't forget that there's a threshold where you start to differentiate. You separate the Q from the I, and at that point, you can saturate the signal as much as you want. If you're getting clean, you know, decode of the I and Q, you can pump more signal into it. The indicator's not going to change because it's based on error rate. As you get to the threshold point and the error rate starts to increase, then you'll see the things change. Yes, the reality is moving the antenna is going to be your best way of making that determination. So you can be right close to the transmitter and be, you know, overloading the front end, and moving your antenna is going to be changing the multipath characteristics, and you'll see changes in your indicator. As far as the delay time goes, depends on the set. I know the Samsungs are pretty quick. The Zenith is a little bit slower. One of the Chinese ones that I saw was like ridiculous. It was like 3 or 4 seconds for it to catch up and average out. Depends on the manufacturer and their approach. There's no one set way to do these things, and everybody has their own methodology. Even if they're using the same chipset, so to speak. K2RWK2J.
Comment and to NNU.
Go right ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I'm listening with interest here. It's just that we have to be careful what RSSI means. There are at least two that I did observe when it comes to digital TV. There is one RSSI that they have presented as RSSI, but actually they are representing the quality of the signal at the baseband level, representing more of how much failure is in the bitrate coming in. It's actually a PER measurement rather than RSSI. Then those are the majority of the systems. So what I think you think about RSSI is actually a PER. There are some of those chipsets, as the other chap said, that are actually picking up the signal, the RF signal, right before the first IQ mixer, and they are presenting that as an RSSI, and this is a true signal. This will react very, very fast with the antenna movement and to an enemy.
Query, W2TTT. Okay, W2TTT. Hey, Gordon, a little bit noisy, but glad to hear you checking in. Alex, you probably tuned in a little bit late. Eric did make it clear that an awful lot of the indication of the so-called RSSI really is inverse fifth error rate. Gordon, the leader of the TechNet in New Jersey, W2TTT, go right ahead, K2RIW.
Good evening, Dick, and everybody else. Well, it has been a really interesting conversation. My question is, has anyone noticed with, you know, over the air or cable between those two cases, a lip sync issue, i.e. where either the speech leads or lags the video, and by how much? Does anyone notice that as a characteristic? And of that, and what seems to be the method that is used to bring everything back in sync, if anything, during a broadcast of a particular program? CTRW2TGG.
Yeah, Eric is most likely traveling back from one of his Boy Scout readings. That's why you're hearing quite a bit of dropout as he travels on the Garden State Parkway or whatever. I'll repeat the question. And Eric is going to tell us about this one. And that is that Gordon is experiencing quite a bit of lack of synchronization between the video and the audio. In other words, he sees the person's lips move and the audio is either ahead or behind. And he's seeing that rather frequently on digital television transmissions. Is that a temporary condition for this transient situation we've got right now where we haven't completely switched over to it? What do you think is going on there, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Right, K2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, okay, today the reason for that is it has a lot to do with the receivers. There was a time in the beginning when we started doing this stuff that people had issues with doing lip sync, making sure the audio arrived at the right point in time, along with the picture. Right, and the delays in encoding and putting the streams together have brought some problems into the picture. Right, and essentially what it is that today we've come out with a better way of keeping a handle on that. We've even got automatic lip sync measuring devices through, thank you, the Sarnoff labs down in New Jersey. There's a lot of interesting stuff that goes into this, but when you're finding today, if you find you're way out of lip sync, change the channel back, and chances are it'll come right back. There's processing delays. For example, if you were to look at the analog TV and look at the digital TV at the same time, you'll see there's about 4 seconds between what you see on the analog and the digital. The analog being first, of course, because of the processing delay to encode the MPEG. Oh, and for the other gentleman who asked earlier, actually most of today's receivers, the first part of the indicator is actually the tuner IF. They don't use the tuner ADC. And then at some particular point designated by the manufacturer, it goes to bit error rate. So most of the receivers can deal with that today. I have to step away for a minute, but I'll be back in about 3 minutes. K2RIW, K2J.
Okay, we got lots of questions for you when you come back, Eric. And I'll hold those questions. Let's temporarily flip over to Bill, WBCC UK, who I believe had a question. He's a real patient guy. He's waited all this time. Hope you're still there, Bill. WBCC UK, K2RIW.
K2RIW in the group, WBCC UK. Yeah, I'm still here watching the Giants trying to redeem themselves from last week, which they're doing right now. The question I have has totally nothing to do with the digital TV, but I can comment on hearing all this stuff going on that the government in their so-called wise decision has made
going to be making watching TV more difficult and more time-consuming and expensive than it really is meant to be. For what? For a little bit of a better picture? Well, I don't know. I don't agree with that, and I'd be one of the ones to protest going to analog. But anyway, I'm an old-fashioned guy. What I had to ask you, Dick, has nothing to do with this. I eat a lot of ads on TV for a cell phone.